I have a joint conference committee to appoint on message 429.
We're going to have another call of the Senate.
House Bill 190. Von Vladeren, Chairman, DiCara, and Perkins. Concurrences. Senator Dockstader, are you ready on message 411?
President.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
February the 25th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 411, concurrence requested, Mr. President. Senate file number 144, property tax assessment rules. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 47, noes 12, excused 1. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move message 411 to Senate file 144 and ask for the Senate's favorable concurrence on this. This is the file regarding the rules and regulations for assessment of property. And on page 3, the House has asked us simply on line 13 to add the word class of property rather than to a property. Just simply add the words to a class of property. And we find that to be agreeable and ask for your favorable concurrence.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate file 144, message number 411, and you're asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson. Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DiCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert. Hastert. Honeycutt,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Basie, Von Vladeren,
aye.
President Hines,
aye.
Hastert, no to aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate file 144. Message number 419. Senator Johnson, are you ready?
Yes, Mr. President.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
February the 26th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 419, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 76, snowplows, emergency lights. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 58, absent 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do concur on Senate file 76, and I ask for you to vote aye. Mr. President, I was with the committee down there when they put the amendments on, and if you remember, the bill gives permission to YDOT to study the lighting patterns on the snow plows to see what they could do to make them more seeable under weather conditions when they're plowing. And these amendments that they put on are just fine. I think they probably make the bill a little tiny better. So again, I would ask that you vote aye.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 76, message number 419, and that you're asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert. Honeycutt,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Larson, Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend, Basie, Bonflatern, President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 no.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 76. Reports from standing committees.
President.
Senator Geis.
Having voted on the prevailing side on House Bill 33, I would move for a reconsider a vote on House Bill 33 and ask you to vote aye.
You're asking for immediate reconsideration. The bill is gone from our possession.
Okay.
Reports from standing committees. Senator Coe.
I was under the impression, Mr. President, that we had within 24 hours to move for immediate reconsideration.
My understanding of the rules, you have 24 hours if the bill is still in possession of the body. But as it moves out, that ends the time frame. Senator Von Flatiron.
Mr. President, as for further clarification, you can give notice to do it within 24 hours, and it will remain in the Senate during, if you have asked that the next day you will bring it back up, then it will remain. But if it physically leaves, end of it.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 26th, 2009. Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 299, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend. No, Senator Meyer, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Considerations of bills in general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business. Considerations of bills in general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Landon.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. First bill for our consideration this afternoon, House Bill 301. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 301, sponsored by Representative Lockhart, Wyoming Industry Partnership Act 2, an act relating to the administration of government. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin. Senator Larson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 301, Wyoming Industry Partnership Act. There are no amendments, Mr. Chairman. What this bill does during the interim, your committee number 9 was actually charged with developing ideas for workforce training and recruitment. Wyoming's workforce continues to be kind of inadequate, according to most estimates. The state does not have a well-defined plan for recruitment, developing, and training, and this bill is designed to correct that. Let me start out by saying this piece of legislation has no funds in it. The money isn't there. There isn't any appropriation, and there isn't any money in it at this particular time. But it does provide for rulemaking, requiring reports, and setting up the program. It is very possible, knowing the impetus of the stimulus bill, that there could be money become available to put in this type of a program, and that will have to be evaluated by the people doing that, the governor's office, et cetera. It does require matching funds, as you can see as we go through the bill a little bit. It requires matching funds in order to do and works with targeted industry sectors, and it enables the department to set up some rules for operating the program should some money become available in order to help our workforce training. This is designed to do it not on individual by individual, but by segment by segment. And you can see that the department shall require minimum private sector in-kind or cash matching fund of at least 50%. Goes on page 5 to create the rules of what grants may be available after they set the rules and put some rules into operation. And so, Mr. Chairman, this is a continuing attempt to try to organize a program, and I'm not going to tell you that in the future there might not want to have some money appropriated there, but there's nothing in it now. Anything they do will come before the Appropriations Committee, and it's an attempt to get a program going that can help the training and supplying of our workforce. And so I did hand out it has my name on a couple of papers with the black heading on the top that defines that. That was handed out early this morning where you can go through and see what it is. I think it enables, and we've heard a lot of testimony about if we're going to do these kind of things, do them through workforce service. That's what we're doing. We're enabling them to set up the program, write the rules. If money does become available through the stimulus package, it can be decided at that time whether to accept, reject, or whether it can fit into this program. And so I'd be happy to attempt to answer any questions and ask for your approval on the bill.
Any questions? Question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 301, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. The bill has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, House Bill 160. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 160, sponsored by Representative Landon, Constituent Service Allowance, an act relating to the legislature. It was referred to Committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, Hines, Massey, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Hines, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. President?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 160. There are no standing committee amendments, and I'll yield to the floor manager, Senator Schiffer.
Senator Schiffer.
Yeah. And Mr. Chairman, continuing the old axiom that water flows downhill, I will yield to the junior senator from Sheridan County.
I'll try to get it right on over there. Senator Burns.
So yesterday I was the boy from Sheridan, today I'm junior. Mr. Chairman,
I was just going to say, I've never seen a boy do some of the things you've been able to do. So, Senator, take over.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if that's a compliment or not. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 160. We all are familiar with the constituent service allowance. It allows up to $750 per quarter in expenses related to our service as legislators while we're at home out of session. As happens to many of us, sometimes we are busier during one part of the year than we are during other parts of the year. So sometimes we'll have very small expenses, if any. Other parts of the year, we have huge expenses that go over the $750. That's the situation that House Bill 160 tries to address. What it basically says is that if you've got money left over from a particular quarter, you can apply it to the other quarter if you have expenses that exceed the $750. The total amount of money you may get stays the same for the calendar year. It cannot be more than $3,000. But it basically gets rid of that firewall between each quarter. And that's basically the bill, Mr. Chairman. It's quite simple.
Any questions for the sponsor? Question has been called for. All those in favor of Mr. President's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 160, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
House Bill 160 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration, House Bill 169. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 169, sponsors by the Minerals Committee. Mortgage Loan Originators, an act relating to mortgage loan originators. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin. Senator Larson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with the due pass recommendation on House Bill 169. And, Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment, and I would ask that it be read in at this time.
Would the reading clerk please read the standing committee amendment?
House Bill 169, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 49, line 12.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment and to explain both the Standing Committee Amendment and the bill, I'd like to call on Senator Honeycutt.
Senator Honeycutt.
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me on my... That's this far away? Okay. The rookie got the biggest bill of all, 78 pages. So I'll try to make it as quick as possible. This is a big, big bill. It's not as ominous as you would think it is. It's got 78 pages. However, it is a bill with a lot of duplication because it addresses two areas of the statutes, and there's a lot of duplication because of that. At one time it was two bills, now it is one bill, so that's why there's a lot of extra pages. If the good senators from Carbon County and Goshen County want to close their eyes and take a break, they sure can while I go through this because it's a long process. This bill relates to Wyoming Residential Mortgage Practice Act, which is in the statutes as 402301. And also addresses the same topic under Uniform Consumer Credit Code 40-1401. It deals with licensing mortgage loan originators. The Washingtonians set the stage for a collapse in the residential market, and these people are going to pay the price as usual. However, I do think it is time for us to license these people, their impact on our communities and on a family, and the amount of money that they deal with over the course of their careers is tremendous. There's a lot of harm that can be done when a mortgage loan originator doesn't do his job, his or her job. This bill only applies to companies outside the financial institutions being defined as banks, credit unions, whatever savings and loans there are left. These are the independent mortgage lenders that you see pop up all over the country when times are good and disappear when times are bad. This bill was based on some model legislation. The U.S. government, in its attempt to try to control things a year ago, passed the Safe Mortgage Lending Act, which stands for, I guess I better not read that. I can't read that. Safe and Fair Enforcement Mortgage Lending Act, that was passed last year. It's very comprehensive. They told the states that if they do not license mortgage loan originators, that they will do it themselves and the states will lose their primacy. They will use HUD to license these people. Our banking commissioner and an interim committee on this issue got together over the last year and a half or so and worked with the Conference of State Bank Supervisors, which is known as CSBS, and American Association of Residential Mortgage Regulators, to put together some model legislation for the states who want to do this on their own rather than let HUD come in and license these people. This bill here is modeled specifically after that model legislation adopted by these two groups. It is the minimum. It is not the maximum. They didn't want to get too much more involved than what was already there. And once we go through the bill, you'll see there's probably too much anyway, but that's the minimum to meet the requirements of the SAFE Act. And as it is right now, this has been approved by HUD, and if it was approved today, we could go ahead and start do our mortgage licensing prep. The state banking commissioner will be in charge of this portion of the acts in terms of registering the mortgage loan originators. And with that, I think we'll just kind of start going through this page by page, and I'll see if I can maybe summarize a little bit of it for you, too, before we get started so you know what you're going to get into. A mortgage loan originator, as I said, works for an independent company. The individual must now file an application to the nationwide licensing system and registry, which I'll define later on, to become a licensed originator. That individual must submit a personal history and provide fingerprints for an FBI criminal background check. They must provide authorization for the registry to obtain a credit report. They need to take 20 hours of pre-licensure education courses that are approved by the registry. They must pass a national mortgage test with a score of 75% or better. They must take 8 hours of continuing education annually in order to maintain their license. Never had a loan originator license revoked by any mortgage supervisory authority. Has not yet had a felony in the past 7 years, never had a felony involving fraud, dishonesty, breach of trust, or money laundering. All licensees shall be renewed annually through the registry. Compliance with initial licensing requirements must be met. And finally, all license originators must be covered by a company's surety bond. You can see this is pretty onerous, but it is to protect the public in its entirety, I guess you would say. On the first page, it kind of talks about, of the bill, talks about all the basics of this bill in itself, modifying the Wyoming Residential Mortgages Practice Act, modifying the Uniform Customer Credit Code, amending, providing for new definitions, which there's a tremendous amount of those, providing exceptions for licenses, providing for the surety bonds, providing for confidentiality, providing coordination with and disclaimer to a national registry system, providing for enforcement, requiring reports, providing for loan origination, licensing, and registration, authorizing rulemaking for the commission, providing for processing of applications, providing for pre-licensing education, providing for continuing education, requiring testing, providing for license renewal, requiring fees, making conformity amendments, repealing a license exception, and providing for an effective date. On page 2, we start with the definitions. We will start in the section 4014, which is the Uniform Consumer Code, which usually deals with junior liens when you're dealing with residential property. Any organization employing or contracting with a mortgage loan originator shall maintain a surety bond to the state of Wyoming in accordance with this section. The bond is to be used to cover individual mortgage loan originators employed or under contract with that organization. In the event an organization or mortgage loan originator employed by this company has violated any provisions of this act, the bond shall be forfeited and paid by the surety bond to the state of Wyoming for the benefit of any person so damaged. And that's page 3. Going over to page 4, report to the registry. The administrator, who is the banking commissioner, shall regularly report violations of this act relating to transactions conducted by mortgage loan originators. He will contact the registry and let them know what the violation is. Part 4, the mortgage loan originator licensing. This gets more into more definitions. The channeling agent is not somebody dealing with a Ouija board, but is a person who does funnel various parts of this bill and all the data that's collected between the various participants. Clerical or support duties, they break those out so that the loan processors and underwriters who just pretty much just do the paperwork for the originator aren't included in this. Unless, of course, which we'll see later in the bill, if they do meet with the public and are paid to promote the mortgage loan company, then they can be licensed as well. They're just defined here as a clerical support aid, the receipt and collection, the distribution analysis of information, communicating with a customer to obtain information necessary for processing, but does not include offering or negotiating loan rates, and that's the key between a processor and originator. Depository institution means any organization that is covered by Federal Deposit Insurance Act, which includes credit union and saving loans, even though they do have their separate entities. And I might mention just right here, I think what's going to happen because of the turnover in mortgage loan originators in the banking industry, that they too eventually will be using these same rules and require a license for their originators as they hire them in the future. Dwelling means a residential structure that contains 1 to 4 units, no bigger than that. The next page is page 6. Federal banking agency means the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve or the National Credit Union Administration. Another definition, Romanette 6, immediate family member. That describes a spouse or child or sibling because these people can take care of loans for them without being licensed. Individual means a natural person. Loan processor, underwriter, here we go, means an individual who performs clerical or support duties for a mortgage loan originator. Mortgage loan originator, going over to page 7, means an individual who, for compensation or gain, or in the expectation of compensation or gain, takes a residential mortgage loan application, offers and negotiates the terms of the residential mortgage, but shall not include an individual engaged solely as a loan processor or underwriter, shall not be a person who only performs real estate brokerage activities and is licensed or registered in accordance with Wyoming law as a real estate person. It shall not be a person who just does extensions of credit revolving timeshare plans, which I'm not sure we have much of that here, but maybe in the northwest part of the state we do. The next definition is non-traditional mortgage product. The next definition is real estate brokerage activity, which means any activity that involves offering or providing real estate brokerage services to the public, including acting as a real estate agent or real estate broker for a buyer, seller, leasor, leasee of real property, arranging meetings or communicating with any party interested in a sale or purchase, negotiating on behalf of any party in portion of a contract relating to sale or purchase of property. Page 9, and Mr. Chairman, I think if we could, we could wait to the end for any questions if they pop up so we can get through this. D, engaging in any activity for which a person engaged in activity is required to register or license as a real estate agent. A registered mortgage loan originator means any person registered with and maintains a unique identifier. Once you are registered with the registry, you will get your kind of a logo or seal that you will apply to all of your literature and all of your application forms, and you will have to have that on your business card as all, identifying you as a registered mortgage loan originator. Meets the definition of mortgage loan originator, as is an employee of an institution, bank, credit union, farm services agency, a depository institution, a subsidiary that is owned and controlled by a depository institution regulated by a federal banking agency. The registry means a nationwide mortgage licensing system and registry, which is a mortgage licensing system developed and maintained by the Conference of State Banking Supervisors and the American Association of Residential Mortgage Realtors for the licensing and registration of mortgage lenders, mortgage brokers, and mortgage loan originators. The registry is those two groups I mentioned before who put this model legislation together. Residential mortgage loan, I think we all know what that means. It's all defined under UCC rules in 4014. Timeshare plan, that's pretty well described. The unique identifier, again, is I just discussed. 4014-641, loan originator licensing registration. An individual of this section shall not engage in the business of a mortgage loan originator for any dwelling located in Wyoming without first obtaining and maintaining annually a license in accordance with Part 4 of this article. Each licensed mortgage loan originator shall register with and maintain a valid unique identifier. An individual is exempt from, on page 12, subsection A of this section, if a registered mortgage loan originator, when acting for an entity as described as a bank, an individual offers or negotiates terms of a residential mortgage loan with or on behalf of an immediate family member, serves as his own for his own selling his own residence, is a licensed attorney. The attorney is compensated by a lender or mortgage broker or a other mortgage loan originator. They, too, may have to be licensed under this agreement, any agent at which lender, mortgage broker, or other mortgage loan originators. An individual engaging solely in loan processor or underwriter activities who does not represent to the public through advertising or other means of communicating, providing information, including use of business cards, stationery, brochures, etc., they are exempt as well. However, a loan processor originator, as I said, if they are engaged in negotiating, they, too, will have to be licensed under this. Bottom of page 13, for the purpose of implementing an orderly and efficient licensing process, the administrator of this, the Banking Commission, will establish rules and regulations and interim procedures for the licensing and acceptance of these applications. Loan originator application, page 14. Applicants for a mortgage loan originating license shall apply in a form prescribed by the administrator, which is the banking commissioner, and based on this legislation. For the fulfillment of this purpose, this act, the administrator may establish relationships or contract with the registry, which they will in this case. In connection with the application for licensing as a mortgage loan originator, the applicant shall, at a minimum, furnish to the registry information concerning the applicant's identity, including the following. Fingerprints for the submission to the Federal Bureau of Investigation, a personal history of experience. I kind of summarized these before, but I'll run through them real quickly. An independent credit report obtained from a consumer reporting agency. Information related to any administrative, civil, or criminal findings by any governmental jurisdiction. For the purpose of this section, in order to reduce the points of contact with Federal Bureau of Investigation, the administrator may use the registry as the channeling agent for all this information. Each applicant submitted under this application submitted under this section will be accompanied by an application fee not to exceed $300 as established by the rules of the administrator. Still under section 4014, bottom of page 16, the administrator should not issue a mortgage loan originator license unless the administrator makes at a minimum the following findings. The applicant has not had a mortgage loan origination license revoked at any time. The applicant has not been convicted of or pled guilty or nolo contendere to a felony in a domestic, foreign, or military court. During the seven-year period preceding the date of this application, at any time preceding the date of the application, if the felony involved an act of fraud, dishonesty, or breach of trust or money laundering, the applicant has demonstrated financial responsibility, character, and general fitness, such as to command the confidence of the community and to warrant a determination that the mortgage loan originator will operate honestly and fairly and efficiently, which I think is a very vague and very subjective part of the bill, but it is in there and needs to be. Line 4 on page 18, the applicant has completed the pre-licensing education requirement pursuant to 4014-644, which is coming up. And for the purpose of this paragraph in this section, a person has shown that he is not financially responsible when he was shown a disregard in the management of his own financial condition. A determination that an individual has not shown financial responsibility shall include but not be limited to having any outstanding judgment, having any outstanding tax lien or government lien, having any foreclosure in the past 3 years, having a pattern of seriously delinquent accounts within the last 3 years. Bond request, an applicant is entitled to a hearing on the question of these applications for a license. And then there's some discussion here about when the administrator has to notify them of their license. If a hearing is held, if an applicant is brought in and has to have a hearing because of something found in the application, the applicant and those filing objections shall reimburse or prorata the administrator for his reasonable and necessary expenses incurred as a result of this hearing. Page 20, pre-licensing and relicensing education of the loan originators. In order to meet the pre-licensing education requirements, a person shall complete at least 20 hours of education approved in accordance with the subsection B of this section, 3 hours of federal law and regulations relating to mortgage originators, 3 hours of ethics, which shall include instruction on fraud, consumer protection, and fair lending issues, and Romanet Little 3, 2 hours of training related to lending standards for the non-traditional mortgage product marketplace. For the purposes of this subsection, pre-licensing education courses shall be reviewed and approved by the registry. The review and approval of a pre-licensing education course shall include review and approval of the course provider as well.
Senator, my apologies if I could interrupt for just a minute. I've been asked if the body could stand at ease for 5 minutes, and then we can come back to the center of the bill there. So it's been moved that we stand at ease. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The body is at ease for 5 minutes. Thank you.
Go ahead.
the committee of the whole would please come back to order. Thank you for your indulgence. I think we got some work taken care of up here. I appreciate it. And Senator Honeycutt, sorry for that interruption. Please get back to where you were. We are on House Bill 169. Thank you.
I've run over this at so many times that don't try to try to make this short, but it's not. So what we're going to assume is that I've hit the high point for the license.
Mortgage loan originators, the licensing is pretty rigorous. The banking commissioner is going to oversee this. The banking commissioner is charging fees, and they, in their fiscal notes, suggest that they have the staff available right now. And the fee should cover any costs that they really should have. So there's no problem with the banking commissioner and what this is going to cost. These are all requirements based on the Safe Mortgage Lending Act. It is based on two professional companies, the banking and residential mortgage regulators. Their model legislation, 24 other states are using this right now. And I think we can go ahead and take questions right now on what we have. There's only one small section in here that isn't dealing with 4014 or 4023, and that's a criminal code part, which gives the administrator the ability to deal with the fingerprinting and the sharing of confidential information with law enforcement, et cetera. With that, I would be glad to take questions, and I thank the leadership for cutting this short.
Senator Honeycutt, it looks like the Standing Committee Amendment is pretty straightforward. Do you need to track that in at all? Do you have a quick explanation on that?
Yes, I could. It's mostly deletions. The biggest and some few corrections. The biggest deletion is on page 57, lines 1 through 7, and that was Senator Larson's, that's his suggestion, 57, 1 through 7, and a little bit on page 56 as well, that B section. The administrator shall issue a license upon investigation. He finds that the financial responsibility, character, business qualifications of the applicant, a little bit of subjectiveness there that doesn't need to be in here and not part of the requirements.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment? Are you ready for the question? Question on Standing Committee Amendment 1 to House Bill 169. All in favor of Senator Larson's motion that it pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Standing Committee Amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Any questions of the sponsors of the bill? Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very quickly, this whole thing, we thought we had a simple bill, but then when we get into it, it's conformity with the federal regulations. What they have to do. If we don't do it, they're going to come in and take over and do it themselves. There is no fee involved with general funds because all of these are based on an assessment to the banking industry. So even though there may be a little bit more money in here, as the good senator suggested, it is not general funds. It would just be assessment on those who are taking the tests and being it applied to. It is necessary to conform to the federal regs or they're going to do it, and basically that's the bill. Thank you.
Any questions? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 169, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. House Bill 169 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, House Bill 127. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 127, sponsored by the Management Council, Obsolete Laws, General Revisions, and Act Relating to the General Revision of Laws. It was referred to Committee Number 12, Rules and Procedures, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, Hines, Massey, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Hines, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. President?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the do pass recommendations on House Bill 127,
There are no standing committee amendments, and I yield to the floor manager, Vice President Ross.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, your management council brings to you House Bill 127, Obsolete Laws, General Revisions. We undertook during the interim to have a subcommittee of certain legislators and primarily the deputy director of LSO, who did a lot of work in starting to go through our laws and either repealing or getting rid of obsolete laws or making revisions to fit the way in which we are operating at this point in time. So, briefly, if the way you can tell what this bill does, although it looks fairly long, it is broken up into sections. Section 1 is provisions affected by court decisions, provisions that have been determined to be unconstitutional, and you will see that on Section 101 and 102. Those have been overturned by some Supreme Court cases. Section 102 is baseless pleadings. Section 1B are provisions affected by court decisions, provisions other than holding that the provision was unconstitutional but affected by other court cases. And you'll see there with regard to Section 103, appraiser's fees, and that's an issue concerning the term qualified appraisers. And so we've modified that law because in 1988 or 1994 we changed. There was a Supreme Court. In 1994 the Supreme Court held that the legislature could not have intended that the limits above apply to qualified appraisers, and so we just cleared that up. Provisions, Section 2, provisions which are obsolete due to earlier legislative action and subsequent implementation. This pretty much deals with the whole issue of justices of the peace. We no longer have justices of the peace, and so we've taken out all kinds of references to justices of the peace. Section 2A are provisions which are obsolete due to earlier legislative action and subsequent implementation. These deal with fines and penalties to the school fund, and we've corrected that language. Section 2 under there are provisions which are obsolete and fully executed, meaning they've already taken place, and so we've changed some of the laws or struck out some of the references there. Section 2 on page 5, provisions which are obsolete and archaic references. Most of all of this deals with the Register of Deeds. There's language throughout our statutes about Register of Deeds. There is no such thing. It's actually our county clerk. And so you'll see numerous references to change to either striking that or inserting the term county clerk. And that takes you over to page 12, 13, 15, keep on going, baby, 16, 18, 19, here we go, 18. Archaic provisions, which are obsolete. This is, once again, some references to the Department of Administration and Information with regards to some accounts. They don't do this at all. And so we have taken that language out. And then over on page 20, we have incorrect citations or failure to update cross-reference provisions. And so we've just done some tweaking of some of the language there. And I wouldn't call this basically a revisers bill, but it's kind of in the genre of that, in which we're going through, and we will continue to do as a process through Management Council, start going through our statutes and either revising or getting rid of obsolete and archaic laws, and I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, earlier there was a I had some concern expressed and this bill contains many subjects. And we do have a provision in the Constitution that a bill can only take one subject. However, I'm referring to Article 3, Section 24, no bill except general appropriation bills and bills for the codification and general revision of laws. And that's the category that this bill falls in, so it's okay to cover many different subjects because we're the general modification of laws is what this does. So it is constitutional.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer, for clarifying. Any questions of the sponsors? Senator Ross?
Mr. Chairman, I believe there's a committee of the whole amendment and ask that be read in at this time.
Would the reading clerk please read the committee of the whole amendment?
House Bill 127, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 6.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 127 and ask that the further reading be dispensed with. What this amendment is adding a section at the end of the bill that the staff have brought to us. And it just says that any actions adopted by the legislature during this same session, which may be in conflict with anything within this bill, then those ones that are adopted have precedent and shall prevail. It's a common amendment that we put on in the revisor bills and bills of this type, and so I ask your support.
Thank you, Mr. President. Any question? Question has been called for. All those in favor of Mr. President's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 127, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion is carried. We're back on the bill. Any questions? House Bill 127. All those in favor of Mr. President's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 127, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. House Bill 127 has passed the Committee of the Whole.
Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 152. Would the clerk please read the bill?
House Bill Number 152, sponsored by Representative Harshman, Athletic Trainers Licensing, and Act Relating to Professions and Occupations. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cole, DeCarrier, Jennings, Massey, Von Flader, and Senator Cole, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Cole?
Mr. Chairman, it's me over here standing with all these other four guys. Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a do-pass recommendation on House Bill 152, Athletic Trainers Licensing. And the sponsor of the Committee of the Whole amendment has to leave for a conference committee. And if it's okay with the sponsor of the bill or the sponsor of the bill, I'm going to have him take up the Committee of the Whole amendment first. If you'd have that read in or read in, please.
House Bill 152, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 1, line 7.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 152. There's two subjects in this amendment, Mr. Chairman. The first one's on page 2, lines 22 and 23. The LSO brought that to my attention. It's a cleanup amendment. It should be institution instead of institute. And finally, over on page 16, after line 20, Mr. Chairman, to add a repealer, section 2 repealer, 3325102A4. That is a reference in the physical therapy law. The physical therapists now specify the certification organization that the physical therapist, or excuse me, that the athletic trainers should use. With the passage of the bill, that is no longer needed. And as a result, I'm bringing forward this repealer and urge adoption of the amendment.
I'm sorry. The clerk read in the wrong amendment. Would you read the committee of the whole amendment, please?
House Bill 152, Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 7.
Senator Massey?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill of 152, and have offered an explanation of the amendment and be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions? All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay?
No.
See you later.
Thank you, Senator Massey. Senator Coe, back on the bill.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm not quite sure how to do this now because we have a standing committee amendment that the committee of the whole amendment comes in and deletes part of, but I will move that standing committee amendment at this time and ask that it be read in.
That one has been read in.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the standing committee amendment just goes to the intent clause on page 17, or 16, excuse me, into 17. Section 2 and takes out the intent clause. We didn't feel that's appropriate to put it in statute. Ask for approval of the amendment.
Questions on the amendment? All those in favor of standing committee amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. That amendment has passed too. Back to Senator Coe.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I defer to Senator Landon for an explanation of the bill.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure a bill has come out of the good senator from Cody's committee with a higher recommendation. This is a measure that I think is ready. In all seriousness, this is not a new topic, I know, for our Senate. It's something you've dealt with a little bit before. In fact, this exact measure passed the other chamber last year and was worked very hard in committee here in the Senate. It was ready at that time and just ran out of a little bit of time. So House Bill 152 is a bill that would allow for state licensure of certified athletic trainers. Why do we want to do that? I honestly believe because it's time that we do. It is time to expect these healthcare professionals to be licensed like any other. And at the same time, this measure would provide assurances to those of us who hire these individuals that these licensed trainers are well-versed, well-trained, well-educated, and are who they say they are. These are our first responders. I think it's very important that when we go out to hire a certified trainer, we know exactly, what we're getting. I want to emphasize, as a point of introduction, that it doesn't do anything at all to our personal trainers, those ladies and gentlemen out there who help to bulk us up or trim us down. This doesn't have anything to do with personal trainers. It does not infringe. In fact, this is a bill that's been signed off by the PTs and the OTs and the EMTs and several other Ts. So there's a lot of support out there for this bill. Wyoming, by the way, is one of 9 states that does not license its athletic trainers. This bill would provide for some reciprocity for our Wyoming trainers and some like considerations from those other states. Real quickly, I'll walk you through the bill. It's a standard licensure bill. I know you recognized that when you stayed up past midnight to read this bill. Title 33 in our state statutes, that's professions and occupations, the licensing section of our statutes. You'll see at the bottom of page 1 that 101 through 112 will be created to include athletic trainers along with about 44 other professions in Wyoming, including barbers, et cetera.
Standard licensure language, you will see all the way over on page 4 after you get through the definitions that 103 is where we establish a three-person board, one doctor and two licensed or certified trainers. Standard licensure language through page 8 of the bill. On page 9, this is the section of the bill which exempts those who are currently working in the field that periodically do what a trainer sometimes does. For example, we're not going to keep a sixth grade basketball coach from taping an ankle. We're not going to keep those personal or weight trainers from doing what they do. This just means that they cannot hold themselves out to be a licensed or certified trainer, and they can't put those numerals after their name. Notice that on the middle of page 10 that no trainer can practice alone. They have to be under the supervision of a physician. Page 11 under Romanet 4, we exempt those trainers who are here for a short period of time. We don't require them to be licensed in Wyoming. We're talking about Cheyenne Frontier Days, maybe the indoor football team up in the center part of the state. These are people who would come into our university over the mountain, you know, to work for a day or two. Page 12, 13, how do you apply for and how you are issued a license. Page 14, 15, all the disciplinary measures that are spelled out. Again, this is all standard licensure throughout this particular title of our statutes. Page 17 provides for that modest appropriation to get this board started. I believe this is a good bill. I think it's ready. I think it's time that we get these people licensed. And, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for any questions.
Any questions on the bill? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, my question is, how many people is this bill going to put out of their livelihood? And how many amateur coaches is this bill going to forbid to do what the coach typically does? And let me explain where I'm coming from. When you look at the provision on the top of page 10, this is in the after July 1, 2010, no person shall, for pecuniary gain, engage in the practice or offer to engage in the practice of an athletic trainer unless. Okay. Then you have to look at what the practice of an athletic trainer is, application principles. You look at page 3, immediate care of athletic injuries, common injuries, medical emergencies, psychosocial intervention and referral, conditioning and rehabilitative exercise, and nutritional aspects, a bunch of things there. Now, it seems to me that that's describing. You go to a health, and you have to look at then the definition of athletic injury. It includes participation with an educational institution, professional, amateur, recreational sports club or organization. It seemed to me that you get the typical health club. It falls under that. And the people at the health club were employed to teach you how to use the machines, etc., now have to be athletic trainers. They aren't that now. I don't think they could qualify. They really, what they're doing is teaching you how to use the machines that are there, teaching you how to do the exercises. There's probably some psychosocial intervention, rehabilitative exercise going on. Seems to me you're catching that. Seems to me you're also catching, you aren't catching because of the pecuniary gain process, you're not catching the typical Little League coach, Mr. Chairman. But if you have a coach further up, for instance, in some of the amateur sports, I think they are compensated to some degree, and I think they're caught in this. Mr. Chairman, this is a fence. I think it's relatively easy to cure. They've cured it with exceptions within the educational institutions. But there's more to life than just what happens in the educational institutions. And I think that maybe with a second reading amendment, presuming it advances to second reading, and I think it should, we can cure these things. But I think as it stands right now, this is a fencing bill and would be a problem to enact. So I will say I stand ready to work with the sponsors to cure the problem, but I think there is a problem here and it needs to be cured.
Senator Landon?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and I appreciate the comments from the good senator from Natrona County. Would be happy to work with you on that particular area of concern. I did not read that into this bill, and truthfully, I don't see the fence, but it might be barbed wire, and I might be standing too far away from it. I think there are several provisions in this bill that provide for not fencing anyone. We take care of those coaches. I specifically outlined that we exempt all those coaches out there who are taping ankles. We even exempt those people who are already employed in training of any kind. But again, I'd be happy to work with the tall senator.
Additional questions on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 152, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
Would the ayes please stand? Would the noes please stand? House Bill 152 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yes, may I have brief privilege as a floor, please?
Yes, sir.
Good senators, I've been told by the technology people that the printer, anything that you requested of the printer to print since noon, there's about 22 orders that were on that. In order to correct the problem, she had to delete all of them. So evidently it's up, it's okay, but those things since noon have been deleted. We're doing really well. I'm going to put up half a dozen bills here right after the break, and we're going to keep on cranking. Thank you very much.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 184. Would the clerk read the bill?
House Bill number 184, sponsored by Representative Anderson. Mineral taxes, audit, and refund, an act relating to taxation and revenue. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 184, Mineral Taxes, Audit, and Refund. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does, a number of years ago, we started moving, and this, I believe, is the last area we have to work with, that for audits and refunds in the mineral industry, the time window will be 3 years. Excuse me. And what this bill does, you'll see it goes through into each one of those areas for the coal industry, for oil and condensate, and for natural gas, and says, okay, the window is 3 years. The other thing is that if a taxpayer is entitled to a refund, whether or not they apply, if the Department of Audit says you're entitled to a refund, then they get notified, okay, you're getting a refund. And that was a policy decision made a number of years ago. We're just getting caught up on the statutory changes. And I'll go through, you'll find, because of the way the revenue code is written, there's a separate code for oil and condensate, for natural gas, and so on and so forth. We go into Title 39, Chapter 14, and I'll draw your attention first to the deletion, and I'm on page 3, and this is, you'll find exactly the same thing all the way through for every category of mineral. If a taxpayer makes an erroneous or illegal payment, the county commissioners direct them, shall direct the county treasurer to refund the erroneous or illegal payment to the taxpayer. When there's an increase in value of any product and is subject to approval of any agency of the United States or the state of Wyoming or of any court, the increased value shall be subject to property taxation. And this is all language we're taking out. In the event the increase in value has disappeared, either in whole or in part, then the amount of tax which has been paid on the disapproved part of the value should be considered excess tax. And then here's the time period within 1 year following the final determination of value. Any person who has paid any such excess tax may apply for a refund, and the Board of County Commissioners shall refund it. We've moved away from that system, and starting on the bottom of line 24 of page 3, if a taxpayer has reason to believe that ad valorem taxes imposed by this article have been overpaid, a request for refund shall be filed with the department by submitting amended returns within 3 years from the date of the production should have been reported pursuant to 3914107. Any refund granted shall be subject to modification or revocation upon audit. And that's the nuts and bolts. That's the change. You'll see exactly the same language all the way through. And that one deals with the ad valorem. If you go over on page 5, we're now dealing with crude oil and the condensate. Again, the same words. Mr. Chairman, let me back up top of page 5. Again, we're on the ad valorem tax. And I'm starting reading from line 1, notwithstanding paragraphs 1 and 2 of this subsection, the taxpayer is entitled to receive a refund of any overpaid, in this case it's ad valorem or severance tax, identified by an audit, regardless of whether a refund has been requested. So what it does, we're kind of catching up with what we've been doing for quite a while. 208 again. The same words over on page 6, page 7. That has to do with the ad valorem tax on crude oil and condensate. Over on the top of page 9, we're going into the enforcement. This has to do with the arm's length transactions. Mr. Chairman will recall the excitement when we went to valuing at arm length transactions. Again, it's exactly the same words on page 10, going on to page 11, under 309. But that's really what the bill does. We pick up the coal over on page 13, again going through the ad valorem and the severance tax, exactly the same system of assessing taxes, auditing, and the three-year time period. Mr. Chairman, that's what this bill does. I think it's a good move. What I'm told, and I'm learning as I go, this is the system we've been moving to for about, I think actually quite a while. We're just finally getting caught up. I'd be glad to respond to any questions.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one question. And as I understand the current law, they have 1 year from when it's been determined what the value really is of their product. And sometimes these situations have long appeals or involved within the Department of Revenue. Sometimes they involve litigation. If, in fact, this process of finding out what the final determination of value goes longer than 3 years, what does that do to the taxpayer? And, Mr. Chairman, that would be in the case of coal, oil, gas, any of the minerals.
College Senator Schiffer. Fremont County is absolutely right. under the old system. That's the 1 year, and I'm just, again, it's you can see it under 3914209. The deleted takes out the 1 year, the old way of doing it, that you had the 1 year. We're not doing that anymore. If a taxpayer believes that they've overpaid, that you now have 3 years to say, I'm going to amend my returns. And from the date it should have been reported, if it's modified revocation, upon audit, then we go into the voluntary that they're going to say whether you apply or not, we're going to adjust your taxes as it goes along. As I understand the way the system actually works, for example, if you go to court over the value of a mineral, you don't have the 1 year, the window stays open from that date forward. Then they'll come in and audit it, goes to court, you settle all your differences, and then if you're eligible for a refund, or they can get you for an overpayment. Mr. Chairman, for example, and the reason that this is timely, in the area particularly of coal bed methane production, that's different than the natural gas over in the western part of the state. When you go from a very low pressure dewater to a high pressure, where do you tax that at? That's been in court, to my knowledge. Well, they had another decision in 2008 where the Supreme Court came in trying to establish that value. And it's the best I can say is we're getting kind of a pattern from the Supreme Court on the valuation of coal bed methane. It's pretty straightforward valuation in terms of the gas, primarily in the western part of the state. But those people, and sometimes, I think by and large, they've owed taxes, but I don't think that's 100% true. But if they're entitled to a refund, they get that refund. In other words, we've updated the system. It makes it, I think, more streamlined for the Department of Revenue. Department of Audit obviously is involved as they go in and audit the production, but also for the producer. And it has reduced paperwork, strangely enough. It's one of the miracles of 2009.
Senator Bebop.
Mr. Chairman, I still want to be sure I understand, and that's a great example to take that Supreme Court case on the point of taxation for coal bed methane. If, and that took longer than 3 years from when that started. So if this law was in effect, and as I understand the Supreme Court decision, those producers owe the state extra money. But since it took longer than 3 years, clearly under existing law, they have to pay it because it's 1 year from the final determination of value. But if this final determination of value that we just found out in last December of 08 took longer than 3 years, would they still have to pay the state of Wyoming?
Chairman, yes, in fact, with that, for example, we'll use the December 2008 decision, where in that case the company was found liable for a higher tax. So they do have to pay the tax. You know, there's a couple things you can get out of, and I won't go there, but they still owe the tax because the clock will it's held, they kind of unplug the clock while it's in court. But yes, those companies are liable with a court decision, irrespective of the three-year time lapse. They're still liable for the tax.
Any other questions of the sponsor on House Bill 184? Any other questions? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 184, please say aye. Any opposed? Nay. House Bill 184 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, House Bill 283. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill
House Bill number 283, sponsored by Representative Anderson, Taxation and Revenue Digital Products, an act relating to taxation and revenue. It was referred to Committee number 3, Revenue, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 283, Taxation and Revenue Digital Products. And I think I'll carry this one myself, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. We appreciate that.
My relief pitcher's nodding and go for it, Coach.
So I there's no this. Place for that to run downhill.
No, sir, there isn't. Let's see, Mr. Chairman, this bill, what it does, it keeps us in conformity with the effort to move forward with a way to collect sales tax on internet sales. And in order to stay current, we have to include as items that we can levy a sales tax on specified digital products. And what that means, electronically transferred, and this is at the top of page 2, digital audiovisual works. And that means a series of related images which, when shown in succession, impart an impression of motion together with accompanying sounds. I think that means these little DVD gizmos and stuff that we get off the internet. But I'm technically challenged, so I'm just really guessing there. Subparagraph B on line 6 is digital audio works. And that's a series of musical, spoken or other sounds, including ringtones. And the third category on line 10 are digital books, are generally recognized in the ordinary and usual sense of books. In fact, what those are, I've seen one, we saw one in committee, you can buy a machine that if you know how to manipulate the machine well enough, you can, over the internet, get a book, and, Mr. Chairman, literally, if you push this side, the pages turn backwards, and if you push this side, the pages turn forward, and you read the book. When you're done with it, you can order another book on this machine. It's neat. My wife's a librarian. I'm thinking of buying her one just to see how it works. But the idea with the bill is, if we choose to tax them, and you can order those from various companies around the world, I think, then it'll fall under the national sales tax collection method. But this keeps that category available. That's what the bill does. Doesn't levy a tax or anything like that. That decision comes later. I'd be happy, Mr. Chairman, because I am really pretty much an expert, I'd be happy to visit with you more about digital products.
Thank you, Senator. I do believe on those ringtones that the fight songs are exempted, but I'm not sure. Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Help out the colleague from KC here a little bit. When I used to be on that committee over the interim, one of the things that came out in that committee was your cable TV and when they sell you a pay-per-view movie. When you went to the streamlined sales tax, there wasn't any sales tax on that movie. But if you go down to one of them that has the movie in a little box and you rent it there, there's sales tax on it. So what they looked at is, well, why would one be exempt and the other have to pay it? So you have to balance that out. And so when they got started on that train, then they went out there and they threw the digital books on there and they threw the ringtones. Of course, we all heard about all the, well, maybe if you didn't have teenagers download music. A couple years ago, there was a company that was giving away all the music that ever
recorded, they'd get a copy of it, and you get on their website, and you could download it as long as you looked at all the advertising as you download it. So, and that's been outlawed because of the copyright laws, but now those guys are selling the music. So if you buy the tape or the CD tape at the music store or the any other store, you pay sales tax, but if you get it off the Internet, you don't. So if we want to stay in the streamlined sales tax system where if you buy that book out of Wyoming then and it processes through the system, then you pay the sales tax out there wherever you bought it. So this is part of the system. If we're going to stay in this thing, which I think we probably are going to stay in it, then this is how we do it.
Any other questions? Senator Case?
I think one key point, and it was made by the chairman of the Revenue Committee, this actually doesn't impose any taxes, though. There are no taxes imposed with this. We're just putting the definitions in the law. And it does bring us kind of in compliance with streamlined sales tax, which would be a nationwide effort to try to collect sales tax. But, you know, that decision, that final decision is down the road on that, Mr. Chairman. So don't be thinking that this imposes a tax, because it does not.
Thank you, Senator. Any other comments, questions? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 283, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. House Bill 283 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, House Bill 177. Would the reader, clerk please read in the bill?
House Bill number 177, sponsored by Representative Millen. Board of Dental Examiners Revision, an act relating to the Board of Dental Examiners. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 177 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Would the reading clerk please read in the standing committee amendment?
House Bill number 177, standing a committee amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 7.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move the standing committee amendment. Mr. Chairman, the standing committee amendment does two things. One, it restores the provision that was in the original bill before it was engrossed, relating, giving the board here, this is the Dental Practice Act, giving the board the ability to have an examination for licensure on the rules and regulations in the Dental Practice Act. Mr. Chairman, I suppose if you're, the testimony in committee was the problem they were having was dentists were improperly delegating authority to their auxiliary people, and they wanted to eliminate the excuse that the practitioners were unaware of the rules. I suppose if you're going to have a good fence, you've got to teach people that it's there. And so the committee put this provision in. The second provision relates to a problem. What happened was a couple of years ago, we passed a bill that in this area that inadvertently created a situation where if a dentist doesn't pay their license fee by the deadline, they're no longer licensed and they have to go through the full examination and the full process again to get licensed, and they're theoretically out of practice. In the meantime, the second provision in the amendment is a cure to that particular problem. I'm told that the Attorney General has found a better way to do this, a much simpler way that avoids some possible problems, and that will be dealt with in a subsequent amendment. Mr. Chairman, that's the standing committee amendment. Vote it up, vote it down. I'd stand ready to answer any questions on it.
Are there any questions on the standing committee amendment? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 177, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay.
No.
Standing committee amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I yield to Senator Hastert for an explanation of this good little House bill.
Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 177, the Practice Act revisions for the Board of Dental Examiners, and where the changes come in is on page 2, line 9, and adding the language there, including necessary travel. This provides for compensation for travel days for the board. There are times that the dentist close their practices to attend these meetings, and it's just like any other organization, any individuals, that it's just fair compensation for when they travel. And they also travel out of state to national, regional and national conventions, so this just provides an avenue to get reimbursed for their travels, Mr. Chairman. Pages 2, lines 18 through 24, the reason for this is, purpose of this is for administrative efficiency so that the president and secretary don't have to sign every single voucher. There's a lot of vouchers that come in through office supplies and whatnot that this allows for a designee to the secretary to eliminate a lot of the mailings of the vouchers back and forth across the state, and it allows the executive director to authorizations to sign some of the vouchers. On page 3, Mr. Chairman, and at the top of page 4, this language allows the board to make related to the licensure of dentists. This is necessary for the board to carry out its function as a licensing board. For example, through the rules, the board, there is licensees by credentialing, which allows the dentist who is properly licensed in another jurisdiction not to have to go through full examination process, Mr. Chairman, to get a Wyoming license. This change provides for the specific authority for the board to do that and to make other rules relating to the licensing, Mr. Chairman. Then on to page 4, lines 10 through 22. This language there clarifies that hygienists actually have to pass the exam that they're taking, not just complete the exam. So it's just some language there. And then the repealer, it's unnecessary because the regional test has its own rules for passing and retaking of if the licensee fails the local examination under board rules, they don't have to wait until the next examination period. This is simply to say that they can don't have to wait till the next quarter, the next section to take the exam, that they can pay the fees and take the exam a little bit sooner. Essentially, that's the bill, Mr. Chairman. There is a committee of the whole amendment, amendment number 1, and I'd ask that be read in.
Thank you, Senator. Would the reading clerk please read the committee of the whole amendment?
House Bill number 177, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 7.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 177. And as the good senator from Natrona County indicated, that this came to us after an AG's review. And the other language they felt was problematic in the, and that we have in the standing committee amendment, this only deletes the standing committee amendment as far as the provision for saying that they have to be, if they lose their license, they're on probationary license for a period of time. What this does is just say that they grant them, they have a grace period. The AG's opinion was that was somewhat of special legislation. So this is a cleaner way of doing, accomplishing the same thing, but just granting the grace period for that period of time. And I'll stand for questions on the amendment.
Any questions on the committee of the whole amendment? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the committee of the whole amendment, it's a much cleaner way. What it does is take the long-term fix we've got of a grace period and apply it to the people that have the problem right now. So as soon as this bill is signed, they can go ahead and take care of the problem. It's a cleaner way of doing it. And I would add, Mr. Chairman, that I inquired of the dental people, and they do have some regulations relating to late fees that you'll have to pay if you make this particular mistake.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Hastert's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 177, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? The amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, one question to the presenter. I am hoping that there are fees paid in by the association, and they go into the general fund, and then the general fund goes back out and pays the travel and everything we're going here. So basically, are we handling their money, or is the state paying for it?
Senator Scott.
Chairman, the general way these things work, and I believe this is no exception, is you have a special account for the fees of this board, and they're self-funded. So the license fee and the other fees that are charged to the profession then take care of all the expenses and reimburse the state for any expenses. That's almost universal with these licensing boards.
Any other questions on House Bill 177? Question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 177, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. House Bill 177 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and set again.
You've heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Uh-oh.
Excuse me, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Leader.
15-minute break.
I think we got that.
Oh, okay.
All those in favor, try that again. Say aye.
Aye.
We are at ease. Committee of the Whole will come back to order. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 295. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
Thank you. House Bill number 295, sponsored by Representative Simpson, Western States Energy and Environment Symposium, an act relating to the Western States Energy and Environment Symposium. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, and Larson. Excuse, Senator Larson, Senator Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend. No, Senator Meyer, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move when the Committee of the Whole rise report it do so with the due pass recommendation on House Bill 295. And, Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment, and I ask that that be read in at this time.
Would the reading clerk please read in the standing committee amendment?
House Bill number 295, Standing Committee number 1 to engross copy, that substitute number 1 be substituted for House Bill 295 and that substitute number 1 do pass.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that amendment number 1 and explain a little. As we got amending this bill, it became obvious we had so many amendments that were bigger than the bill. The decision was therefore made that we should prepare a substitute bill for your understanding. And with that explanation, Mr. Chairman, I'd ask that we vote aye on the
standing. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 295, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? The amendment has passed. We are on the bill. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The substitute bill, I'll explain just a tiny bit about what this bill does. It came over from the House with the idea that we need to get together with Western states, people who are in a position to make policy, and try to figure out where the West is going to be headed relative to energy. And that's a brief explanation of it. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I will call on some of the prime sponsors, beginning with Senator Bebout, and ask them to explain the bill. Senator Bebout.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to take that a little bit further, what the Chairman of Minerals said, and particularly when you look at the state of Wyoming, the production of our coal, our uranium, our natural gas, and what some states have, the position some states have taken relative to the use of coal to generate electricity, the use of gas in certain ways to generate electricity. So it made a lot of sense to try to do this. And what the purpose of this bill is, members of the Senate, is to set the framework up to have a Western States Energy and Environment Symposium. If you look at the bill on page 2, it sets up a steering committee. The steering committee is composed of one member of the House, one member of the Senate, one member representing consumers of the energy, one representing energy producers, and one representing general business. And then this steering committee shall do the things that's lined out on the bottom of page 2, develop plans and funding for the symposium, solicit funding, invite certain persons to attend, including legislators, executive branch members from the 13 Western states that are a member of the Council of State Governments, experts from all key energy industries, from conservation, top experts in the field of development, energy use, environment, economics, state and regional chambers of commerce and business roundtables,
a representative from the county government, municipal government from the 13 western states. You go on to the next page, page 4, talks about different organizations that should be invited and participate in it, think tanks. When you get down to the bottom of page 4, Mr. Chairman, that's really what the purpose of this is, and that's to work to establish a cooperative agreement among the participants to develop a high-level cost-benefit economic analysis assessing the challenges of energy development, production, marketing, use, and environmental production within the western states, and including an analysis, and then there's a litany of that. And what the steering committee will do is it'll work with the School of Energy Resources at the University of Wyoming to conduct this symposium. If you look at page 6, you'll see that legislative, on the subtitle B, legislative members assisting the School of Energy Resources shall receive salary reimbursement, that the School of Energy Resources may contract with consultants as necessary to put on this symposium. And then you'll see on lines 14 that the symposium may be held within Wyoming. There's an appropriation with this bill, Mr. Chairman, $250,000 to the School of Energy Resources on the bottom of page 6. And that's to conduct the symposium, and it's for staffing, technical support, contracting consultants, and so on and so forth. There's also a $200,000 appropriation starting on page 7, line 12, to the LSO, and this shall be for the period ending December 31st, 2010. If you turn the page, Mr. Chairman, to page 8, that's the purpose of it. Salary and per diem for the legislative members appointed to this. Payment of the actual expenses of the Wyoming legislators who attended. And, Mr. Chairman, on page 8, lines 9, one point that I want the body to be sure and be aware of, the award of scholarships, fellowships, or other financial aid or honorary to provide for the attendance of select legislators and executive branch members from other 13 states. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill. You know, I think it's timely when you look at what's going on in the West relative to energy production, energy consumption, the different issues that are out there. And the whole purpose is this, is to get the key policymakers together to talk about these important issues and see if they can come up with some kind of a statement by that group, a consensus, if you will, to see what we can do, particularly Wyoming. And one of the things that I think is really important, we're hearing a lot about it, is how Wyoming's moving ahead on carbon sequestration, and makes a lot of sense since we produce so much coal that we should look at how we deal with the carbon. Not saying that'll be the whole focus of this, but certainly that's part of it. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Senator Sessions?
Mr. Chairman, just a question on page 6, and you say maybe held within Wyoming or in any other state that may participate in the symposium. Why would we let it go to another state? That's my question.
Senator Larson?
Mr. Chairman, there's an amendment that will be coming up there, but I'll address that answer that question right now. We want it in Wyoming. We want to hold it in Wyoming, but you have to realize you're bringing legislators, experts, everything from all over the West. Originally, this was supposed to be done by the end of September this year. Having done two of these, I'm not sure we can get it done in that time. And I'm not sure we can get it done in the time permitted even now, though we do have some more time. But it takes a place with air service, very good air service, because they're not going to drive here for most of them. It takes all of those kind of things. So it's possible, under the time frame we have, that it may not be able to be held in Wyoming. And I'm including Jackson in that for the good senator from Fremont County. I don't know. I don't know that it can be held in Wyoming, and we don't know that. And that's what the steering committee will decide. Obviously, we want it in Wyoming if we can put it all together. But the prime sponsors in the House had indicated it may have to be in Denver or Salt Lake or somewhere like that. If we cannot get the facilities, we can't get a place to hold it. We've narrowed the focus in committee down from what it was, very expansive, and we're hoping to get the top people from each of the western states to come and talk about where we're headed, what we're doing with transmission lines, with what kind of energy they're going to accept, whether it's all got to be renewables, whether all of those kind of things, but there's no point in having a conference, in the judgment of our committee at least, to just go talk together and feel good. So we obviously would prefer to have it in Wyoming, but it may not be possible to be able to book facilities, get air service, and those kinds of things. And so it's very possible that it could have to be somewhere else within the time frame that it's been talked about. But that will be decided by whomever is on the steering committee in working with the University School of Energy Resources. And if it can't be, we didn't want to have that the legislative limitation on it to where it just can't be put together in Wyoming and then have it fall apart.
You ready for the question? Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, if I may have the privilege, or if you would allow me, the two sponsors of the Committee of the Whole Amendment are both in the conference committee, and if with your indulgence, I would ask that we read in the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 295.
You may have that indulgence. Would the reading clerk please read in Committee of the Whole Amendment. Thank you.
House Bill 295, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Substitute Bill number 1, page 6, line 15.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this time, I'd move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 295 and request that we dispense with further reading of the amendment. What you have is addresses the good lady senator from Laramie County, and does that very thing. It goes to page 6, line 15 of the substitute bill, deletes shall and inserts may. So ultimately, it would require it to be done in Wyoming. You've had the discussions just a minute ago from the good senator from Teton County about the. And I think it's fairly obvious. I don't know that you need to belabor that point, but that's a decision that we get to weigh and vote on with respect to this amendment. And on behalf of the sponsors, I ask for your favorable consideration.
Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, for the reasons previously expressed, I would ask you to vote no on this amendment.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I too ask you to vote no on this amendment. And let me give you a concrete example. The bulk of our natural gas goes to California. That's our market. The chairperson of the Energy and Natural Resources Committee in the California Senate has a year and a half of legislative experience. A year and a half. And that's the biggest economy. It's one of the biggest in the world. But they're our customer. We need those people on board. Mr. Chairman will recall when we had CSG West in Jackson Hole here 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. And we actually got some legislators from California. They came. And they were the ones that were walking around listening to their cell phone. When the governor called them back in, those guys were gone within 15 minutes. They're full-time legislators. But we need them to come. We got to open the dialogue with those folks. And if we make it difficult for them to attend, they won't come. They just won't come. It's the way of the world. Let me give you another example. Again, I'll use California because they're heavy-duty purchasers. One of the people we probably need to have show up here is the chairman of their Public Utilities Commission, because he's the man that's going to decide what the mix is on the electricity going into California to make sure it conforms to their statutory requirements. That guy can pick and choose what conferences he wants to go to. We got to make it easy for him. Now, I think every effort will be made to have this meeting in Wyoming. But understand, if you want to get the players in that are important to our economy, you have to make it easy for them. We want them there. We want them open a dialogue with them. One other thing I'll point out, that the upshot of this meeting, within, and I forget, it's 45 days after this is over, the School of Energy has to come out with a report. Where have we found consensus? If I had to say, you know, what one of the things we should shoot for, and understand, if you throw the convention, or if it's your dance, you get to pick the band. We can set the agenda on this. We've got to convince those folks that, one, our energy is good, it's reliable, and it meets their standards. And we need that dialogue. So that's why it's important to get these people to show up, but understand, they don't have to come. And so if we have to give some ground, we may have to. Again, and I'll stress, this is on a real short type of timeline for something of this sort. I'll also represent to you that I visited with the chairwoman from the Alaska Senate. They're already talking about when, where they want to be here. And if you take the 13 western states, there's a group of us that are energy producers, and there's a big group of consumers. And this is an opportunity to get together, but we got to make it easy, or they just won't come, and we will miss the opportunity to set the dialogue and reach some sort of agreement, if we can, on who's going to pay for example, who's going to pay for green energy. Let's face it, if we put in a lot of wind energy and rates go up, if the 520,000 of us that live here in Wyoming have to foot the whole bill, and just rough figures, let me go back. Say it's all natural gas. If you generate all your electricity with natural gas, your electric rates go up about four times. Now, I'm sure if it gets cold enough, the 520,000 of us will pay it. But let me suggest, if we can persuade our good neighbors over in California to foot the bill, I think we'll be doing them a favor. Now, I'm not, you know, I mean, somebody smoother than me is going to put it smoother than that. But that's the nuts and bolts of this deal. And so it's important that we want them on board. Well, we want them to come to our dance, and like I say, we'll hire the band.
Ready for the question?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Larson.
I don't want to belabor this, but having had a little experience in putting a couple of these together, there is a difference between this and what we did at CSG, though we tried to slant it. And that's, at this, we control the agenda. We did not control the agenda at CSG West. I was not the president. I was just the Wyoming organizer. And I think that's critically important to get them to come to our meeting to talk about energy in light of the things that we want to have them participate in. We control the agenda, and that's one reason I think it's very critically important that we do it, we be the sponsor. Doesn't have to be here, but I just think it's very, very critical. We've narrowed the focus of this. It started out, people were thinking it was going to be 300-400 people. There isn't any point in having another convention. We want policymakers, people that know. We want experts who can tell us what's going on and have it maybe narrowed down to maybe 100 or something like that of the most important people that we can get in the energy field and the policymakers from each of the western states. So don't think of it as a convention. It isn't. It's going to be a symposium with a report coming from the School of Energy. And I think it can be very valuable in helping set the energy future of the West, and I would urge you to support it.
All those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 295, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay.
No.
The amendment has failed. We are back on the bill. House Bill 295. Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 295, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? House Bill 295 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, House Joint Resolution 7. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Joint Resolution Number 7, sponsored by Representative Brechtel, U.S. Constitutional Convention, repeal. A joint resolution to repeal request made to Congress to call a convention for the purpose of proposing amendments to the Constitution of the United States. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a favorable vote to do pass recommendation on House Joint Resolution 7, U.S. Constitutional Convention repeal, and was noted, Mr. Chairman, that in the committee I voted yes for a resolution. And I would say that...
Did you repeat that, please, Senator Larson? There's something wrong with my mic.
Yeah. This is one of the first resolutions I've found that actually does anything, and so I would like to turn the explanation over to the sponsor, Senator Burns.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, the bill itself is fairly self-explanatory, but just for a quick explanation, this legislature has called for a U.S. Constitutional Convention under Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution, I believe it's nine times. 1939, 1959, 1961, 1963, three times in 1963, apparently they were very active, 1975, 1977, and in 1979. Mr. Chairman, this is a scary situation. Under Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution, it takes two-thirds of the legislatures to actually call a U.S. Constitutional Convention. There is no language in Article 5 as to how representation is made from the states, and there's also no particular language in the Constitution as to what the restrictions would be on this constitutional convention. Would they be restricted to only the item that they were called upon to do, or as a constitutional convention, are they open to do anything? Mr. Chairman, to me, this is quite scary because 32 states have already called for a constitutional convention over the years. In my opinion, we're fiddling with the DNA of government here. And what this resolution does is it rescinds all those previous calls for a constitutional convention. Even though I agree with most of the reasons called for in here, the way to do it, I think, at this point, is not a constitutional convention. Mr. Chairman, there was a Committee of the Whole amendment. I would like that read in, if I could, please.
Would the reading clerk please read in Committee of the Whole Amendment 1 to House Joint Resolution 7.
House Joint Resolution 7, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 7, line 8.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Joint Resolution 7. Mr. Chairman, when we were appearing before Senate Minerals Committee on this, the chairman of the Senate Committee asked a very good question. Because of the fact that there is so little specifically stated in the Constitution about the powers of the states as to whether they actually have the authority to rescind a call for a constitutional convention or not, because that's not specifically mentioned in the Constitution, that he suggested that we want to make this language as strong as possible and suggest that I take it to the Attorney General and ask for any additional language he might have. The Attorney General sent me back a three-page letter, and he went over a lot of the issues whether it's rescindable or not. And he also suggested additional language at the end of the resolution that adds, at the end of on page 7, after the word repeal, add the words rescinded, canceled, nullified, and voided. And that's on advice of the Attorney General. So, Mr. Chairman, I would stand ready for any questions on the Committee of the Whole amendment.
Question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Joint Resolution 7, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to stand for any questions.
Question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Joint Resolution 7, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. House Joint Resolution 7 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration, House Bill 286. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 286, sponsored by Representative Kohlberg. Federal Natural Resources Policy Account, an act relating to the Federal Natural Resources Policy Account. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, and Session. No, Senator Burns. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole, rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 286. There is a standing committee amendment, and I would ask that it be read in at this time.
Would the reading clerk please read the amendment?
House Bill 286, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 3, line 12.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, for an explanation of the bill, I would ask that you call on the junior senator from Fremont County.
The junior. Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, I be that junior senator. Members of the Senate, Federal Natural Resource Policy Account. Many of you remember that this is an account that was set up in the late 90s, and it was money to be expended by the governor to work on behalf of the state of Wyoming and its local governments to deal with the issues of federal land policy relative to how that affects our state, multiple use, our water, our grazing, our natural resources, all different sorts of things. And Mr. Chairman, what this bill does in that Federal Natural Resource Policy Account, it allows the conservation district to be able to participate. And if you look at the bill on page 2, lines 18, starting with 17, it says, participation of the state, a state agency, a county, or a conservation district as a joint lead agency to prepare an environmental impact statement in accordance with rules and regs promulgated by the Federal Council on Environmental Quality. And Mr. Chairman, this gets into the cooperating agency status of what we're trying to do to help these counties in the western part of our state primarily, although it's happening up in the northeastern part of our state as well, to be at the table working with the federal land administrators to be able to cooperate and try to come up with some good federal land policy relative to how it affects our great state. If you go on to page 3, you can see the participation may include, and it's in the implementation of environmental impact statements and associated records of decision. And then Part C, starting on line 9, in the expenditure funds from the Federal Natural Resources Policy Account pursuant to this section, so on and so forth. And, Mr. Chairman, that's where the Standing Committee Amendment comes in, and I would like to move Standing Committee Member Number 1 to House Bill 286.
Thank you, Senator. I think Senator Burns did move that.
No.
He did not. Thank you, Senator Bebout.
Now, Mr. Chairman, what this amendment does, there was some language starting on lines 12 and ending through county on 13 that was sort of vague, and I agree with the Standing Committee Amendment. We will change that to say add to the internal expertise of the state, a state agency, a county, or a conservation district. I would ask for your favorable consideration on this Standing Committee Amendment. If there's no questions, I would call for the question.
Question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion to accept Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 286, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The amendment is passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, that is the bill. It just allows conservation districts to participate, representing the county and the state in the cooperating agency meetings with the federal land decision makers relative to issues important to Wyoming.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I was a no on this bill. Part of the reason being that I think it's going to put an increased burden on the natural policy account. Just for the body's edification, one of the questions we asked in committee is how many conservation districts are there in the state? So as opposed to counties, which right now is the smallest political subdivision that would be getting these funds. There's 23 counties. This bill would add 34 conservation districts onto that list. So if you're going to vote for this bill, keep in mind that you may be voting to increase the additional appropriations onto into that account.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, that's what my chairman over there said is exactly right, except that the governor is the one that organizes all these guys. So he's the one that says, I want you, you, and you, and you come with me or go for me to the table and be the cooperating agency and go do all this for me. So it doesn't really pull all those conservation districts in as a group. It just makes them available as another tool to put at the table. And if you remember earlier, we talked about the watching the grass grow on a bill this morning. Sorry about that reference. But, you know, this is where the expertise is in a lot of these counties, is at those conservation district levels. These are the guys that are on the ground. These are the guys that a lot of times go out and collect the data. And if the governor can go out there and say, I've got a real good expert here, I want him at the table, I want him cooperating as a cooperating agency, that's what this does. And I would urge you to vote aye on the bill.
Senator Bebout.
And Mr. Chairman, the bill contains no appropriation. I want to be sure everybody understands that. Currently, as I understand, there's about $1.2 million in the account. I'll just share with you a couple of examples of where the governor saw fit to spend money to try to help. Lincoln County, 1-9-2008, process for coalition of local governments, BLM, and U.S. United States Forest Service Cooperating Agency, $100,000. Saratoga Encampment, Rawlins Conservation District, watersheds in the Rawlins area with the BLM under a NEPA process, 50. And then there was one to regional economic impact of brucellosis, which is sort of interesting because, anyway, there was $50,000 there, too. That's some of the ways this money has been spent.
Question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 286, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. House Bill 286 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, House Bill 46. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 46, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, National Guard Medical Profession Retention Program, an act relating to the National Guard. It was referred to Committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Fladern, Senator Von Fladern, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee number 2, Appropriation, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Peterson, Townsend. No, Senator Nicholas. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Fladern?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I ask that they do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill number 46, National Guard Medical Professional Retention Program. There is a standing committee amendment. I'll ask for that later, Mr. Chairman. And for the explanation of the bill, Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Geis.
We'll make this short and sweet. You have handouts on your desk telling you why we need this. And this is what it costs. What we're doing in this bill is we're not retaining medical doctors in our National Guard to take care of our servicemen. So what this bill will do will help pay part of their liability insurance. If you sign up for 2 years, they'll pay 50% of your liability insurance. If you sign up for four years, they'll pay 100% of it. And this all takes place on page 2, starting with line 16, Wyoming Statute 19-702, the definitions of the program goes down on page line 21. Program means National Guard Medical Professional Retention Program. Line 23 is qualified medical professions and mean a physician, dentist, or optometrist licensed to practice a profession in Wyoming who is currently an officer in good standing in the Wyoming National Guard or is currently fulfilling the requirements to become an officer in the National Guard. Then we go down on Wyoming Statute 19-9703, the requirement for malpractice insurance premiums. You go down on line 17 for qualification, the medical professor who enters, professional who enters into 2 year service contract, the lesser of 50% of the total cost of malpractice insurance. And then you go on down and the most they'll pay would be up to $15,000. I mean, there's a cap on it. Then you go over on page 4, line 5, too little I, for a qualified medical profession who enters into a 4-year service contract, the lesser of 100% of the total cost of malpractice insurance premium paid by the qualified medical profession. And that will not exceed $30,000. So, and then if they don't fulfill their duties that they signed up to do, then they have to pay part of it back. And that's basically what the bill does. And then there's some amendments, and I'll yield back to my chairman, and he can handle those.
Thank you, Senator Guy. Senator Von Flater.
Would you have the amendment read?
Would the reading clerk please read in the standing committee amendment?
House Bill 46, standing committee amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 3, line 18.
Senator Von Flater.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee number 1 to House Bill 46, and all we did there was a correction that needed to be made on page 3 and 4, line 18 on page 3, line 6 on page 4, to strike the lesser of. And then on page 5, line 4, you delete for at least 2 years, insert for the same period specified in paragraph little a1 or little a2. Of this section. Just thought that made a little clearer, referred back to something in the bill. And then on page 5, line 9, after professional, insert as defined in Wyoming Statute 19-9702, and that just made a little clearer too and specified exactly who we were talking about. I ask for your favorable vote on the amendment.
All those in favor of Senator Von Flater's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 46, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? The amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Any questions of the sponsors?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Von Flater.
There's a Standing Committee Number 2, and then the next Committee of the Whole is also a sponsor that is missing, and I don't know if they've set anybody up to Annalise.
Thank you, Senator. Let's read in Standing Committee Amendment number 2, please.
House Bill number 46, Standing Committee Amendment number 2 to engross copy, page 6, line 19.
Senator Von Flater, any comments on Standing Committee Amendment number 2?
I can explain it, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee number 2 to House Bill 46. And what this, the original appropriation of $320,000 was pretty much divided in half. And the reason for that was the general had requested that I have this many slots allotted to me, and that would, if we could recruit all those doctors and pay them this money at worst case scenario, it would be this amount of money. Appropriations did look at it and said, realistically, what do you have and what can you live with at this point? And if this is a successful program, bring it on back and we'll talk about it. but he said, I can live with this many slots right now, and hopefully some of the doctors I have that could get out at any moment, anytime they choose. Yes, I could cover them with this much. So that's why the money was cut. Personally, I'm fine with it, but that's your choice to make.
Thank you, Senator. Question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 46, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 has passed. We are back on the bill. We do have a Committee of the Whole amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in that amendment?
House Bill Number 46, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy. Page 1, above line 1.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if anybody else was designated to explain this, but it's fairly simple. I'll move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 46. It's an amendment by the tall senator from Albany County, and basically it looks like it's more grammatical than anything. Any place in the bill where it says medical professional, he has that deleted and inserts healthcare provider instead. And I don't know that it has any more substantive effect than that.
Thank you, Senator Burns, for stepping in on that. Senator Von Flatern, we'll go with you first.
Speaking on and against this amendment, what this amendment does, if you go to on the amendment itself, if you go pages 30 through 33, where it says page 2, line 23, after qualified, delete balance line, insert health care provider means an individual is defined by Wyoming statute 2714.102, so forth and so forth. What he's done is opened it up to every health care provider, which means doctors of medicine, chiropractors, osteopath, dentist, optometrist, podiatrist, psychologist, or advanced practitioners of nursing, blah, blah, blah. The general came to us and said, this is the people I need. These are the people that are leaving. I've got majority of them can retire anytime they want. They have their time in. We need these people to track this group. And what this amendment does is say that anybody that's licensed pursuant to Title 33 and is called a health care provider would be eligible for this, which means if there is any of those in there or any of those interested in getting into the guard, that $154,000 would disappear before any medical doctor that the general was requesting would even have a chance to go for it. So I ask you to resist this amendment.
Senator Cole.
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe this is appropriate right now with the sponsor not being on the floor, and I would ask that we lay this amendment back and have it, you know, I'll get with the sponsor and he can bring it on second reading, but we shouldn't, based on the argument that's against it, we should not vote against this amendment at this point in time.
Thank you, Senator. There's a motion on the floor to lay this bill back.
No, not the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I will withdraw the motion on the amendment and to give this sponsor. This is what I was going to do anyway, given the resistance to it. And I'll withdraw the motion, and as Senator from Cody said, he can deal with this bill on second reading.
Thank you, Senator. Now we can act on the motion. Do we need a motion? Thank you.
Back on the bill.
You've got to say that.
Absent objection, the amendment has been withdrawn, and now we are back on the bill.
Question
on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 46, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. House Bill 46 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
May I have privilege to the floor?
Yes, you may.
Mr. Chairman, we're finding ourselves in a kind of a unique situation here because of the shortness of time. And the way these bills are coming up, and we have a committee off the floor, I want to compliment the two senators, the one from Sheridan and one from Cody, and the skill in which they managed that situation. So so that bill can move forward, but it can do it in an impartial fashion and get fair hearing. Earlier, we had an amendment was handled by the senator from Natrona County on behalf of one of the appropriations members. That went through unopposed. I think that's totally appropriate. It's difficult to try to get all these bills laid back until tomorrow because tomorrow's final day. So just watch these. This was handled very skillfully. But if you ever feel that a bill is in jeopardy or anything's in jeopardy, you can stand and ask that it be laid back or hold it to another reading, and we'll do it that way. But I congratulate the skill in which that was handled, but we're all aware of that. But we're going to have to move forward the best way we can. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. The next bill for our consideration, House Bill 146. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 146, sponsored by Representative Stewart, Emergency Medical Service Sustainability Trust, an act relating to emergency medical services. It was referred to Committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Larson, Shipper, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole Rise and report it do so with a recommendation that Senate file the House Bill 146 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
House Bill number 146, standing committee amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 3, line 6.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption standing committee amendment. Mr. Chairman, the standing committee amendment corrected the drafting with regard to the word such and other similar matters. I stand for questions on it. I ask its adoption.
Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 146, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I ask that the amendment from committee number 2 be read in.
House Bill number 146, standing committee amendment number 2, to engross copy, page 8, line 23.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the standing committee amendment from the Appropriations Committee. And I yield to Senator Hastert to explain both the bill and the Appropriations Committee amendment.
Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 146, Emergency Medical Services, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I am not ready with the amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, let me explain the committee number 2 amendment then. Mr. Chairman, what they did was basically cut the appropriation in half. My understanding is from the proponent, prime sponsor of the bill, that that's acceptable and does an adequate job of getting the job done. That's exhausted about the extent of my knowledge on it, but I think it's perfectly safe to adopt it. Mr. Chairman, be happy to try to answer any questions. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I visited with the prime sponsor of this bill. And he's okay with this amendment, with the money that's in it. You know, he's kind of like Jack the bank robber, take the money and run, and he's willing to do that.
Thank you, Senator. Question has been called on all those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 146. Please say aye. Any opposed, nay. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I will attempt to explain the bill. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does is it relates to the continued fragility we have in our emergency medical services. In specific, the testimony we had in committee was it was triggered in good part by a situation that arose in Hanna where their emergency management service folded abruptly, went broke, went out of business, and that left a good part of Interstate 80 coming through that part of the world without EMS services. The health department managed and the local people managed to cobble together something to get this done, get the thing back up and running, and they succeeded. But we're afraid we're going to have further crises coming down the road at us in this particular area. And this bill is an attempt to get a little ahead of that. It creates a trust account that will be funded out of tobacco settlement money. We just cut the amount of money in half. It creates an income account that can provide grants so that in a local area where this is foreseen to come in to be a potential problem can come in, ask for a planning grant, ask for a grant to get started in implementation of the plan, so that you've got some ability to deal with this kind of crisis as it arises, hopefully get one step ahead of it. It somewhat mirrors the process that occurred in Carbon County that did succeed in dealing with this. I do not pretend to you that this will solve all our problems in the EMS area. I do believe that it will be useful in giving the health department a bit more tools to deal with the situation. It does envision that as you get problems, that they'll be able to get a system where local resources will be able to deal with it. May well involve a rural health care district or something like that with taxing authority. There are some solutions like that available. This will give us some ability to bridge that kind of a crisis, because I think that the situation that we did have that affected I-80 will not be the first time that's going to happen. And this is a matter of continuing concern. This is basically a stopgap measure, does give them some availability of funds to deal with the problem. Mr. Chairman, either I or one of the Senate sponsors can attempt to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with a do pass recommend. Excuse me. There is a committee of the whole amendment. Thank you. Would the reading clerk please read in the committee of the whole amendment?
House Bill 146, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 3.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 146 and ask that we dispense with further reading. Mr. Chairman, what I was trying to do here, and understand, we're trying to prevent what happened in Carbon County from that happening in other counties or places around the state. So we're trying to construct a tool that the various EMS service providers can go and say, all right, how healthy how healthy is our system of care? And then if they decide it isn't very healthy, to give them an opportunity to go in and get the grant, everything that's been covered, to try and put together a plan that will provide good EMS protection. And what I do, and the first thing is, in the bill, where the prime sponsor has used the word analysis, we substitute the word assessment. That's where we're going to go in and try and judge how healthy is the system of care. That's what the assessment is. That's the first step in this process. So you'll see it looks like a long amendment, but it actually most of it is changing, so we get on that assessment mode in the initial step of this. The guts of the thing are on page 1 of the amendment, starting on line 10. It's where we go into page 3, line 19. And what we put in there is the assessment of emergency medical services in a service area and an analysis of the current emergency medical service system, including. And what these six factors are, those are the six critical factors for a healthy EMS system of care. One is the level of volunteerism, who you've got, how long they've been there, do they reside in the community, those type of things. The level and period of certification, are they an EMS 1, 2, so on and so forth. Response times, how well can they cover the geographic area. Billing practices, in other words, how much are they getting paid for? Rough statistics saying you get paid for about three-quarters of the service that you provide. But if that starts dropping off substantially, you got to know about that. Excuse me. Funding sources and budget sustainability. Are we on sound financial footing? Do we need to go some other route to get funds? And third is call volume. That covers how often are we called out? What type of call is it? Is it a car wreck? Is it a fire? Is it a accident? All those things fall under that. People that know this stuff tell me that that's how you measure whether it's healthy or not. Mr. Chairman, the balance of that all is putting it in the assessment category until we get over to page 6, line 19, where if you've done the assessment and your EMS services are deemed, boy, this isn't healthy, this isn't sustainable, it's not meeting the need, or whatever is wrong, then you can go in and you develop the master plan, and that's where you say, how are we going to fix this? How are we going to make it sustainable? I think it is a two-step process. I think, user-friendly and understand who's going to be using this. By and large, there'll be, at the level we're talking about, there'll be volunteers scattered around. You take a geographic area like Carbon County, a very, very large area. Most of the calls are in the I-80 corridor, those kind of things. We all have those kind of things. So we're taking a relatively unsophisticated system of care and trying to see, can we move it to the next level, but make it suit the geographic area it's in. They won't all look alike when we get done, nor should they. The demands are different in different parts of the state, but we want to make sure it's sustainable and it meets the need. I did visit with the prime sponsor on this amendment. I will assert to you he's okay with it. As a matter of fact, he endorses it. We work together on it. Mr. Chairman, I think this is a good idea. I really do. I don't know if this will work or not, but we got to do something better than what we've been doing in the past, or we'll have more of these outfits break down. So I urge your support for the amendment and for the bill.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Senator Scott.
Chairman, I do think this is a friendly amendment, consistent with the objectives of the bill. I think it gives us a better definition of what we're actually looking for, and I, too, urge adoption of the amendment.
All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 146, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm reluctant to stand up because I know everybody would like to just get through these things, but I do have a couple questions about this bill. In concept, I think it's a great idea. Obviously, my problem is this. Ultimately, this is creating a new trust. And here we are creating a new trust. It'll be around forever. It seems to me it's a little bit of a, I'm trying to understand why we need this cannon to kill this rabbit. It seems to me that you could do this just as well to appropriate this money to the department and have them do this very thing and determine whether or not that's the right thing to do. I'm struggling with the concept of establishing yet another trust to do that. The question I would also have for the sponsor, whoever else is a proponent of the bill, is I'm trying to also understand what basically we've appropriated $500,000 of tobacco money. Typically, we've tried to be relatively respectful of the purposes for which AML monies and tobacco monies have been appropriated, using it for things related to tobacco. I'm trying to understand here the relationship between the tobacco funds that are being diverted into this to as the seed money for this trust fund. If you could help us with that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, twofold. It's a statutory trust. So it'll be there until we get broke enough to raid it for some other purpose. That's the truth of the matter on statutory trusts. Frankly, you could take the trust out, and it would work fine for the next year, and then there'd be a budget amendment we could fight over next year for next year's operating, because you need to have some money available for when these crises arise. This is just a mechanism of ensuring there is some of those. I was a little surprised the Appropriations Committee decided it was better to cut the amount in half than to take the trust out altogether, but that's a decision they make, and I think it's a rational decision in terms of how we do our budgeting. The question is in the relationship of the tobacco. We have tried to be, and we have succeeded in this state, much more so than many other states, in being relatively cautious in what we use the tobacco money for. It is available to us. There is some relationship here because abuse of tobacco does cause some of the reasons for these EMS calls. We're thinking of it in terms of automobile accidents, highway accidents. It's not a factor there, but it is clearly a factor in the number of heart attacks you have, for example, and those do generate calls for these people. If you can ban use of tobacco in indoor facilities, there's very good evidence that you cut down the rate of heart attacks by 17%. There is a very strong relationship there. So it is not totally unrelated, but we are starting to stray a bit. If you want to try putting general funds in instead on second reading, I'll leave that to be debated between you and the Appropriations Committee.
Question has been called for. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 146, please say aye. Any opposed, nay. House Bill 146 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 276. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 271.
Am I correction. Right? Thank you, Mr. Reading Clerk. It is 271. House Bill 271.
Sponsored by Representative Berger. Medicaid speech and audiology services, an act relating to Medicaid. It was referred to committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 271 do pass. Mr. Chairman, there were no standing committee amendments, and I'll explain the bill. Mr. Chairman, when I scheduled this bill up in Committee 10, what the bill does is it allows Medicaid to reimburse directly for speech and audiology services. When I scheduled the bill up in Committee 10, I thought, oh boy, this is going to be fun. Here we've got a bill that's expanding who can do Medicaid services. It's obviously going to cost money. The sponsor is Madam Chairman of the Appropriations Committee. It's going to be fun to give her a hard time as a spendthrift and bringing a bill that's going to cost us a bunch of money. And what about need for appropriation, all that sort of thing. And, Mr. Chairman, I suppose my mean streak was disappointed when we discovered in the committee hearing that it doesn't cost money. What goes on now is we provide these services, but they have to be done through typically a hospital or some other medical provider that can bill Medicaid. The services get provided. It's a more cumbersome way. You sometimes divert patients into a more expensive setting. The testimony we had in committee was that by allowing the speech pathologists and the audiologists to bill directly, we will save some money through the direct billing. They won't have to go through this other outfit, and we get some of the higher costs associated with that. At the same time, we'll increase the services granted that are actually performed a bit, and the two will pretty much offset, and it's going to be budget neutral. With that explanation, Mr. Chairman, it simplifies life for a bunch of people. It will expand services. It won't cost us money, and I urge the Senate to vote for the bill. Be happy to answer any questions.
Question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 271, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. House Bill 271 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration, House Bill 211. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 211, sponsored by Representative Buchanan, Veterans License Plates, an act relating to motor vehicles. It was referred to Committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, and Landon. No, Senator Von Fladen. Senator Von Fladen, Chairman.
Senator Von Fladen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I ask that they do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 211, Veterans License Plates. And to explain this bill, Senator Landon, when he finds it.
You're on when you're ready, Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 211 came up rather quickly. And I'm glad to be able to come back and describe this bill for you. This is one of those bills that I think we've all become very much aware of with these little units on our desk. Every time we check our emails, I think probably every one of us have received something at one time or another every day regarding veterans' license plates. If you check in your bins, I think that you will have received what we are talking about with this particular bill. And quite honestly, it is the opportunity for our active and retired veterans to have a license plate which looks like this and has one of these insignias right beside the regular portion, the regular license plate. We still have the bucking horse. We still have Wyoming. We've got the flag in the background. These six different insignias would then be provided six other times to identify either active status or to identify that a veteran is no longer active. I can walk you through the bill. It's very simple. There's a measure on page 2 which talks about the county treasurer and how these license plates will be issued. Page 3, if you move over to the change in section D, that's where we indicate active duty servicemen and or veterans right there. That's where the 12 different kinds of plates come in. Down on Romanet 4, an armed services or armed forces license plate by presenting documentation that he is either an honorably discharged veteran or an active duty serviceman of the United States Armed Forces. What that particular provision does is allow for the fact that a veteran must have that kind of approval before they go to the county treasurer to apply for this particular license plate. There, on page 4, you can see what cost has been established there. Mr. Chairman, at this point, there is a standing committee amendment, and I would ask that be read in at this time.
House Bill 211, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engross copy, page 3, line 7.
Standing Committee Amendment goes in, fellow senators, and corrects what we thought would really be a better setup for this particular request for a license plate. The normal fee for the Wyoming Department of Transportation is that $35, and then the additional $15 would go to the Veterans Commission. I actually would say that we might have to make a correction on that on second reading, ladies and gentlemen, because that fee, I believe, is $30. There may have been a communication problem there, but at any rate, a portion of that will go to the Department of Transportation as normally takes place on any license plate that you go in to purchase, and then that additional $15 charge would go directly to the Veterans Commission, payable to the Veterans Commission and applied to the Veterans Trust Fund to be used in a manner consistent with the terms of the trust in support of our veterans programs. That's a quick run-through of the bill, fellow senators, and I'd be glad to try to answer any questions for you.
Senator Landon, before we answer any questions, would you mind moving the amendment?
Oh, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1.
Questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment on House Bill 211, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Back on, well, let's see. We've got a Committee of the Whole Amendment. Would the clerk please read it in?
House Bill 211, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, to engross copy, page 2, line 5.
That is the Landon Dockstetter Amendment. Would somebody with those names like to address the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. And to explain, that's where I tripped up just a little bit. And I apologize for forgetting that in the Standing Committee we amended that particular portion of the bill with regard to those fees and realized only afterwards that we had those amounts wrong. That's a 30-20 split, so that the $20 would go to the Veterans Commission, the $30 would go as normally to the Department of Transportation. Would ask for your favorable consideration of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1.
Questions on the Committee of the Whole Amendment? All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1? I'm sorry. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I can hear him. Let's try again. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask that you resist Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. The Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 fulfills the request of the Veterans Commission. They would like the $35, $15 split for a total of $50, and I have a note that I just received to that effect. So I ask you that we accede to their wishes.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, the Committee of the Whole Amendment would provide more dollars to the Veterans Commission. It was also a request made of us by the county treasurer here from Laramie County. I think it's more consistent, would help with their bookkeeping. I think the 30-20 split makes a lot more sense. But either way, there's a split. Some of it's going to go to the Veterans Commission. I think the Committee of the Whole Amendment probably is going to be more workable for our county treasurers.
Any additional questions on the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1? All those in favor of Committee the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 on House Bill 211, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay?
No.
Thank you. Would all the people who wanted the amendments stand up, please? Those opposed, please stand.
Well.
The Committee of the Whole Amendment has failed. Back on the bill. Any questions on the bill? Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was a no vote in committee. Once again, this is as it stands right now, you're looking at a dozen new license plates. It'll have veterans on one and service in service or servicemen on the other, plus an emblem for that branch of service they're in. As it stands right now, you have a dozen new license plates. You know, we're going to start looking like that state to the south of us. We opened the door with the university, and it's done quite well for the university and the scholarship fund. I don't regret my vote on that. But to keep adding more and more and more license plates, is there any reason we don't give license plates to others? Anybody that requests? Or do we do this every year? So I ask you to resist this bill.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I too speak against this bill. I'm actually quite surprised that it took this long for another bill like this to come after the university bill. And if you, the veterans are fine people. They're a good group. But there are a lot of other good groups and good causes. And if we start down this road, I don't know what our intellectual argument is against providing it to anybody else. Breast cancer awareness, MS research, there's no shortage of good causes. The other question I have on this is, has to do with the Veterans Commission. They're going to be getting a bunch of money if this passes. Getting a bunch of money, is there? I don't see anything about a corresponding reduction in the appropriation, or are they going to just get additional money to handle all these applications coming in, and are they in fact going to then come to us and say, oh, we need an additional full-time employee to handle all the requests coming in? Because there are a lot of veterans in this state. So we're talking about a lot of money. The other question I have about this that bothers me is, what does this accomplish? What benefit does this have to the state other than it makes veterans feel good? It accomplishes nothing for the state. It helps the Veterans Commission, but I don't see any reflection back to the state on that. especially when you go to the individual services on here. So, Mr. Chairman, I think the most important aspect is once, if we pass this, there's really going to be no end to it, and I think the Chairman of the Transportation Committee is right. I think this is putting us down the road to Maryland or one of those other states that has 50 different plates, and you're going to start getting, and as they have seen, you start going to get, start going to find themselves getting into political controversies, such as the Choose Life plates. And I just don't think we need that. And I don't think DOT needs it.
Senator Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. After 16 years of fighting on new license plates, I just threw in the towel at the end of the last battle over that. But if this does pass committee of the whole, I'll be bringing an amendment tomorrow reducing it to 6 brand new license plates.
Senator Bebout?
Mr. Chairman, you know, I'm not a veteran, but these people want this license plate. And if veterans want this license plate for what they did for this country, what is wrong with that? If I had to choose between the University of Wyoming, which is a good system for those plates, and the veterans, I would choose the veterans. You know, they have done so much for this country, and we're going to begrudge them the right to have a license plate? That's all it is. Now, this is different, in my opinion, to the next one or the previous ones. And when I signed on to this bill, I listened to the veterans. That's the only reason I signed on it. Sure, it's an inconvenience. And sure, it's this. And sure, it's that. But it's the veterans, and they gave so much to this country. I think it's something we ought to do. I would ask that you support this bill.
Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What does it accomplish? You're here because these people made it possible for you to be here and debate this process on and for the bill.
Any other? All those in favor of Senator Von Flatiron's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 211, please say aye.
Aye.
Those that want to go up against the armed forces, say no. Would the ayes please stand. The noes, please stand. House Bill 211 passes the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 222. Would the clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 222, sponsored by Representative Brown, Establishment of Private Roads, an act relating to establishment of private roads. It was referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, and Ross. No, Senator Perkin. Excuse, Senator Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? On House Bill 222. Mr. Vice President.
I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 222, and I don't have a clue who's carrying this bill.
Mr. Vice President, they are coming up in a hurry here, as I can vouch for.
I'd ask that this be laid back, Mr. Chairman.
Being the other body of this legislature doesn't work, and we have the sponsor here. Could we give him the privilege of the floor, and he would maybe? I think it'd be a novel idea to let one present a bill.
Thank you, Senator from the Mother County. We appreciate that. Thank you, Senator Bebout. There's a motion on the floor that we lay this bill back. All in favor, say aye. Okay, thank you. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, House Bill 222 has been moved back. The next bill for our consideration
Mr.
is...
Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, this has been a commendable day, and we've accomplished far more than we set out to do this morning. And so I think that we have demonstrated not only our willingness to do the job, but our ability to do the job. And with that, I would congratulate the members of the body and move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Mr. President.
Chief Clerk, read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 54, do pass amended. House Bill 213, do pass amended. House Bill 180, do pass. House Bill 301, do pass. House Bill 160, do pass. House Bill 169, do pass amended. House Bill 127, do pass amended. House Bill 152, do pass amended. House Bill 184, do pass. House Bill 283, do pass. House Bill 177, do pass amended. House Bill 295, do pass amended. House Joint Resolution 7, do pass amended. House Bill 286, do pass amended. House Bill 46, do pass amended. House Bill 146, do pass amended. House Bill 271, do pass. House Bill 211, do pass amended. And House Bill 222, laid back. Senator Landon, Chairman.
Senator Landon.
Mr. President, I would move for adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried and the report has been adopted. Reports from standing committees.
February the 26th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 50, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer. No, Senator Case, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February the 26th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 230, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Larson, Martin, and Perkins. No, Senators Case and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Signing of enrolled acts. Senate Enrolled Act number 46.
Senate Enrolled Act number 46 being original Senate file 37.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 46 being original Senate file number 37. I've so signed. House Senate Enrolled Act number 47.
Senate Enrolled Act number 47 being original Senate file 13.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 47 being original Senate file number 13. I've so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 48.
Senate Enrolled Act number 48 being original Senate file 57.
I'm about to sign Senator Enrolled Act number 48 being original Senate file number 57. of so signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 49.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 49, being original Senate Files 60.
Senate Enrolled Act Number, I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 49, being original Senate File Number 60. I've so signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 50.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 50, being original Senate File 125.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 50, being original Senate File Number 125. I've so signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 51.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 51, being original Senate File 76.
I'm about to sign Senate Original. Senate Enrolled Act Number 51, being original Senate File Number 76. I've so signed. Senate Enrolled.
Mr. President, I think there's a rule in regard to talking on the floor. And I would say the members of the other House are welcome at any time, but you will follow the decorum. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So noted. Senate Enrolled Act Number 52.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 52, of being original Senate File 144.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 52, being original Senate File 144. I've so signed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, Conference Committee on House Bill 226 will meet immediately up in S-15 to iron that out, and then we're going to have a joint select, or we'll have a select water committee meeting right after that.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee number one, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow upon the noon recess in H-8 with the House Judiciary Committee to consider interim topics.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number nine, Minerals, will meet at 8:30 tomorrow. 8:30 because of the governor's prayer breakfast. 8:30 in room 302 to consider the governor's nomination of Sandy Shruptine to the position of Industrial Siting Council, Tom Waterhouse, State Mining Council, Bern Hinckley, Enhanced Oil Recovery Commission, Fred Ogden, Environmental Quality Council, Christopher Mullen, Geological Survey Board, Catherine Gusheski, Environmental Quality Council, and Maha Manahazan, position of Energy Council. And further, Mr. President, we will meet at noon in the Minerals Committee meeting, at the Minerals Committee room in the House, H-18, to discuss interim topics.
Senator Von Bladeren.
Thank you, Mr. President. We hope the Minerals Chairman learns that name before too long. We are meeting tomorrow, Transportation Committee number 8. We'll meet tomorrow with the House in the House Transportation Committee at 9 a.m. to discuss interim topics. Thank you.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, the Revenue Committee will meet tomorrow in the noon recess in House Bill 11 to talk about interim topics. Committee, get there early if you want a comfortable chair, because there's a bunch of them.
You've heard the motion that the Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m.
Oh. I'm sorry.
more announcement. Tomorrow morning is a governor's prayer breakfast. It's 7 o'clock at the Plains, and if you have plans to attend, that's just a reminder.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, just a reminder, the Joint Travel Recreation Wildlife, Recreation Wildlife and Cultural Resources Committee will be meeting at 8:30 tomorrow morning down at B63 just off the parking garage to hear a presentation by Game and Fish on invasive aquatic species, elk and wolf research, and I believe sagebrush mapping.
Okay, now. You have heard the motion that the Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, Friday, February 27th. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We are adjourned.